Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I met Gene Simmons once. His band, Kiss, was touring without the makeup for the first time, and we were backstage before a show at the Lakeland Civic Center in Central Florida. Simmons was an imposing figure, even making casual conversation, but we didn't talk long. Pretty soon, the late concert promoter John Stoll of Phantasma Productions walked up to Simmons. Each of his arms was around the waist of a beautiful, glammed-out young lady whom he introduced to Simmons. The chit-chat was officially over. "Sorry, Bob, gotta go," Simmons said, trading places with Stoll between the girls. "Maybe we can talk later." Never happened. Anyway, this telephone interview with Simmons from January 7th, 1985 is one of my all-time favorites. It captures a moment in time when Simmons was funny, direct, and fascinating, talking about Kiss, of course, but also making a movie with Michael Crichton and Tom Selleck and why he's not likely to be marriage material. I hope you'll enjoy this Mr. Media lost.
Oh, you sound really clear. Where are you calling from?
I'm right next door.
Ah, no wonder.
Oh, I'm in Charlotte.
Why don't you come over? We'll have a drink.
Charlotte, either North or South Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Well, how you doing?
Well, I'm fine.
Your movie debut was great.
Well, thank you.
I want to start with that because...
is that you or me, that sounds?
Probably me. We were on the cheapest phone system in the United States. there was a business up the street was having a, they were cleaning out their stuff, and our business manager went out and raided the trash. No, the movie was real good. I was God, you're so damned evil. It was great.
It's my job.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. Was it hard to be that? Just come across that evil on screen?
Well, here's the thing about that.
Okay.
My job was a little bit more difficult for two reasons. It was difficult to be a bad guy for two reasons. One, the most important thing is Tom is such a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be kidding around lunchtime and flirting with the girls, and, you know, the more sort of rock-oriented girl, the wilder girls would like me. And the TV, anyway, a different sort of a girl would like Tom. And we were both very busy up there, and we'd, you know, be playing, we would dish. Do you know what dish means?
No.
You know, talk dirt.
Oh.
Who's who about what and how many times and all that.
And
so all that kidding around, all that palling around during lunchtime is nice. And then when you get on the screen and I'm, okay, Tom, let's go. You ready? How you feeling? How you doing? And then I'm supposed to point a gun at him and really hate him.
Right.
Because for it to be, you have to feel that hate. I mean, I think it's got to be real.
Mm-hmm.
So that was difficult because he's such a nice guy. So I usually would have to focus in on a piece of his mustache that was off center, or if he wore a silly shirt or anything.
Huh?
To try to work myself up about something. Sometimes I'd go sulk in my trailer for a while in my Winnebago.
Mm-hmm.
And not talk to anybody, just so I could get a little bit annoyed. The other thing is that Luther was not given a history. In other words, in the script, it does not tell you busted as a little baby. Or, you know, nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to make the stuff up. And the only thing I could focus in on was a sort of an animal sense. That for me, Luther was not good or bad. He was just much more sort of animalistic. That's the nature of the beast.
Mm.
So, it was fun to play, but I hope people don't think that's what I'm really like.
Well, that, see, now, that's funny, because, now, I know you must do hundreds, well, certainly 100 interviews in a year, maybe hundreds.
More.
More, okay. And I have this distinct memory of you. As a matter of fact, I think it was probably the most fun I have had interviewing someone in person. You, the last time you guys were in this area, you played in Lakeland. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was the first tour around without the makeup. And we were introduced, and I couldn't hear you. And I didn't realize, without the makeup, I didn't realize who you were. And when we sat down and we started talking, I realized, I'm thinking, this is not the personality that I expected from Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
And then to see this movie, a lot of people, I imagine, around the country must, who just know Gene Simmons as this wild guy from Kiss, must have thought it was typecasting to
yeah.
put you in that role.
Yeah.
Which probably helped in terms of selling the movie.
I suppose, but I know that people, when they meet me, are surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And also when they see the next movie that Gene Simmons does, which is due to start sometime in the spring, are going to be surprised.
Romantic comedy?
No, not a comedy.
What kind of film is it?
It is a suspense thriller, but I'm not playing a bad guy. I'm playing a victim.
That is quite different.
Difficult to describe. Actually, I'm not supposed to. It's a better word.
Oh, is there a title we can...
No.
Oh. Okay.
I'm supposed to be a good boy.
A good boy. All right. How did the role come about? How did you get the opportunity to work?
I flew into Los Angeles with Michael Crichton, the director and screenwriter.
Right.
Wanted to see what Gene Simmons was like, and it's funny, Sting and I are up for the same roles consistently all the time, and he was also up for this.
Wow.
And I flew out to Los Angeles, sat down and talked with him, and within 5 minutes he said, all right, I'd like you to meet the producer. And I met the producer, and we looked at each other, and then Crichton said, all right, I want you to look at him. Don't say a word, don't make any facial grimaces, just let him know you're going to tear his heart out. And in 30 seconds, the producer said, yeah, that's the guy.
Did you, God, I can picture it too. Did you do anything more in the way of taking any classes or any of that kind of thing?
Oh yeah, quietly I've been taking acting classes for 2 years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Where have you been studying?
New York City with Alice Spivak. Actors know who that is.
No, I don't.
An actor would.
Oh, an actor would. How do you spell her last name?
S-P-I-V-A-K.
Spivak.
Most people don't know who Strasberg is either, but actors know who that is.
Yeah, Strasberg is a little more familiar with.
Only because of the school.
Right. Right. And his connection to Al Pacino.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Are you at all concerned that, based on that character, you said you have the next movie already lined up, and it's a different type of thing. Is there any concern on your part, though, after playing someone like Luther, that you're going to get all the Richard Kiel parts, the guy who played Jaws in the James Bond movie?
No.
Okay.
Because a bigger stigma than that is even being a musician and trying to get into movies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you worry about all the negatives, they conquer you.
Mm.
It is possible to swim upstream. Fish do it all the time.
What was your first contact with Selleck like?
Very cordial. We met at the director's house. We sort of looked over some production stills and compared height. And it was not a comfortable feeling to be able to look into somebody else eye to eye, usually because of the tower over. And then it was also not comfortable to look into the director's eyes because he's 6'9". But you live and you learn. It was very, we were comparing notes, what's it like to be on TV? And he says, well, what's it like to be on the road? It was more of that sense. And within 30 seconds, we were cracking awful jokes to each other. So, I mean, it worked very well.
Did you ever get a feeling of, be it Selleck or Rhodes or Crichton or anyone connected who felt like, what is this rock star doing here in this serious movie?
I tell you, it's completely the opposite. I was expecting a bit of that, but it worked completely the opposite. I got a sort of a respect that I didn't think I deserved. People actually gave me the feeling that, you know, when they asked me, well, what do you think of this? And I'd actually say something, and they'd say, all right, fine. And they would go and do it.
Hmm.
I don't know why. Crichton at one point asked me what I thought of the line, and I said, well, I don't think I would say that. He said, oh, really? All right, hold. All 30 people stopped whatever they were doing, and we sat down in the middle of a scene and discussed it.
Hmm.
And then he changed the line and said, all right, well, what would you say? And I said, well, I would say this. You know, nobody does that to me. Nobody. You know, whatever the line was.
Mm-hmm.
He said, all right, fine. Script, girl. And she runs over, and they change the script right then and there.
Wow.
So if anything, I was treated, you know, much more like, I suppose, what stars are used to.
Hmm.
And I was surprised at that because I had no right to expect that. No track record, nothing.
Movie. Now, there was one other movie that I know of that you were involved in. That was Kiss Meets the Phantom.
Yeah, you know too much.
It's my job, man. It's my job. How did that experience compare with this?
Well, it's completely different.
I imagine.
that was really sort of going through the motions. He says, all right, you've got a big flying saucer here. Throw cherry pies on people. You know, ridiculous situations.
Mm-hmm.
And it was more fun. It was more like a Halloween, a costume party.
Mm-hmm.
The best parts of that were just playing live for people.
Right.
But this thing is, you know, slightly different. You've got the camera rolls, and you really have to get into the part.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I could be ready to shoot a scene, and the director can come over and say, all right, we're not going to do that. We're going to do that in 3 weeks. And 3 weeks from then, you've got to be able to hit the mark and have the same feeling, the same attitude, and, you know, continuity.
How did the filming of a movie, in terms of time and the day-to-day rigor, compare with the way Kiss would record an album?
About the same, I would say.
Really?
Yeah, about 15 hours of work. But instead of nighttime, daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And you've always got a ton of people on the sidelines watching you.
Mm.
You know, they're kept quiet, but they still watch. You can't keep the crowds away. And the difference in the studio, of course, is you've got a controlled environment. You can close the door, and nobody can come in or go out.
Right. And of course, I guess when Kiss is recording an album, you and the other three guys in the band are basically in control of that environment, whereas I guess on the set, it's maybe a producer or a director has control, maybe they don't.
Yeah, it's totally different.
Are you surprised at how your career has broadened in the last year or two?
No.
I mean, okay.
No, you want what you want, and then it's up to you to go get it or just settle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a very sort of settling kind of guy.
Mm.
If we ever wind up in court, I go to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can have it all. I mean, you can have anything you want. You just have to be willing to put in the work, number one, and not to be afraid of rejection. If somebody says, no, you're not good, that doesn't mean your life stops.
Mm-hmm.
You try again.
Do you remember the last thing you were rejected for that you wanted?
No.
How old are you, Gene?
I was going to say 25.
I heard that coming, and I was like, wait a minute.
35?
Have your goals changed in the last couple of years? Are you looking...
Well, they're bigger now. You know, you're not satisfied with, just, let's say, having this or having that. It's pretty, you pretty much have the sense that once you climb the highest mountain there is, you can't go higher. You want to climb another mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the sense that I've got.
Oh.
The group makes me happy, and it's the most important thing in my life, but it's not the only thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things, other pleasures.
With the, I want to talk about the band yet, but I just want a couple of things. With the movie career, which seems like, I mean, it was just a really good debut, you know, forgetting the Kiss movie. This was really an excellent debut. Are you going to be a little less in a hurry to return to the recording studio with the band, as opposed to if you...
No, there won't be any problem. I design things so that when we have off time is when I do something else.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, after the movie and after this last record, when it was finished this summer, we had about a month and a half before we started the tour. I went into the studio and produced a group in that time, a group called Kiel, K-E-E-L, which is coming out next week, in fact, on A&M Records. And there's lots of time. People have the sense, well, you know, if you're a musician, you're a musician. How can you know? Does that mean now that you're giving up music? And it's nonsense, of course, because you do have time for everything. It just depends on, you know, no vacation time. And that's, for me, that's not important. I don't like vacations anyway. You get fat and lazy.
You've been working with Wendy Williams, haven't you?
Yeah, I produced an album of hers last year.
Yeah, wow. Right.
And this year it's Kiel, and then at the end of the summer, I don't know yet, there are two or three other groups that I want to work with. I'll do that too. But I also want to do movies, and I want to write scripts, I want to write books, I want to tour, I want to be in Kiss, I want.
Yeah, sounds like the desires of what they're calling performance artists these days.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Eventually I want to direct my own movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to produce. No reason why it can't happen.
Sounds good. I just thought of Wendy O because I had spoken to her a few months ago, and I remember her speaking very highly of you.
Well, that's awfully nice.
Yeah, she did. Oh, she's a riot. She was great.
She's taken to killing Boy George on stage in effigy every night.
Is that right?
Yep.
She didn't make it down here. I don't know if she's still on the road right now or not, but after I spoke to her, she never did make it down here, and I... kind of anxious to see the show. She was such a riot to talk to.
Yeah.
And what a great voice she has. Bob, if we don't do this interview today, I'm going to come looking for you in Florida tomorrow. Okay, Wendy, I think I'd enjoy that. This is the second Kiss tour, sans makeup. So the band is... There was a lot of extra publicity last time around in terms of everybody was interested in talking about the lack of makeup and, you know, how is it affecting the career.
It's funny, we did not make a big deal about it.
Oh, yeah, I know, but we did.
we just sort of went out on the road and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss any of that? Now, a year later, have any feeling
people,
of...
You know, if the sum total of what we're about is the makeup that we wear, that's pretty sad.
Mm-hmm.
We always contended that the makeup was dressing on top, and that, you know, the cream on top of the cake. The cake better taste good without the cream, boy.
Right.
And...
Must give you a lot of extra free time before the show starts without having to put all that stuff on.
Well, you still like to sort of go there and check on things, check on your guitar. You still wind up there at the same time, somehow. But the makeup... You know, is what it is. It serves its purpose, and even caterpillars shed their thing and go on to the next step.
Mm. Do you think the band lost much in the way of money on merchandising without the makeup, or had that already run its course?
No, I think that what happens is every band, including the Beatles and the Stones and anybody else, have one period in their life where it's the phenomena, and then afterwards. You get this other thing. You can have success, and you can have multi-platinum records and all that, and our newest one is.
Mm-hmm.
It's approaching 2 million now, so everything's fine. But that sense, that phenomena where you grip the entire nation, you know, by the balls, collectively, happens once for a band. And it happened, you know. We went through that whole period of this and that and everything with our name on it, and... then we figured that we were taking so much time away from the music and actually worrying about how good the songs were and spending more time trying to design Bally pinball machines that, you know, the focus of the band was lost a bit. So we decided to phase some of that out, but also it happened naturally. And when a certain age group gets interested in you, when the very young get interested in you, that's when you become a phenomenon.
Right. Would you, you know... In rereading over a lot of material, getting ready to talk to you, I saw a lot of the old Gallup polls where the band ranked number one year after year
Oh, sure.
With young people.
And I'm wondering, along the same lines of what we're talking about, today that would be, well, last year that would have been Michael Jackson. Today it'd probably be Prince at the top of those same lists.
Right.
Would you have any, if you were to, I don't know what you think of them, of Prince or anything, but if you...
Well, I think Prince is wonderful.
If you were to speak to him on that subject for some reason, would you have any advice to him about the popularity and the...
Enjoy it.
Hmm.
You know, you get on that roller coaster ride, go for it. You know, just have fun. You're passing through once. Have a good time. There's nothing else you can do. I mean, you can stop it. You can get off the ride. If you don't like it, it doesn't make sense to you, don't do it.
Hmm. I want to ask you about another musical act. It's on the road. A lot of people have said reminds them of Kiss quite a bit. It's Motley Crue.
We took them out. We have no problem with anybody that's reminiscent of us or not.
Hmm.
If I like a band, I don't care who their influences were or are, or even if they're copies of bands.
Mm-hmm.
I like Motley Crue fine.
Mm-hmm.
We took them out. We took, in fact, most of the groups that are headlining, from Rush to Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, you name it.
Sure, over that period of years, and then you get so many tours.
Took everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like new bands.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, to me, new bands are like, you know, little babies, and maybe only mothers understand this. When they see a baby, even if it's not their own, they want to pick it up and sort of nurture it.
Mm.
And new bands to me are, you know, fragile things that should be sort of helped along.
Mm-hmm. Are they the types of things that you've been talking about producing? I know you've produced, and Keel, I guess, is a new band.
New band.
Are they the types of things that you want to lean towards in terms of producing and working with, the newer bands as opposed to established acts?
I wouldn't mind working with an established act, but there's something exciting in seeing something new come along that nobody else knows about.
Mm-hmm.
In 1977, I saw a bar band that I took into the studio and produced a demo for, and nobody else believed in them. And then they took that demo and got a deal. The name of the band was Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that story.
So I like, you know, there's a satisfaction. You know, it's like getting to the top of the mountain first before everybody else gets there.
Mm.
So you can say, I was there first. I don't know why. I mean, getting to the moon is a race, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not so much who's going to get the most out of the moon, but it's who gets there first.
Mm-hmm. You remember the beginnings of Kiss?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, it was quite a while.
11 years, I think.
Did you guys, before you hit on the makeup and before the record came out, and you're just getting things together, do you remember thinking what you were thinking about in terms of the band? I mean, you couldn't have been thinking that...
Beatles.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm sure every band thinks that in one way or the other.
Hmm.
Whether or not they think they can achieve that sort of popularity is not even the point. You just have... I mean, that's your goal.
Hmm.
And before the Beatles, everybody that got together wanted to be Elvis.
Right. Hmm.
And some bands want to be Kiss.
Right.
That's okay.
Are there any good stories that maybe have not been told yet about some of the bigger hits from the band?
Bigger hits?
Rock and Roll All Night, Detroit Rock City, that kind of stuff. Look it up. Are there any, the behind the writing or the how some of those songs came together?
Christine 16 is a true story about a 16-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
She kept writing me letters, and then I finally met her. And kind of interesting.
I have a feeling it would be. I was curious because, I tell you, I spoke to Joe Perry a few weeks ago. And I asked him that about Walk This Way, and the story he told me just cracked me up, and I'd never really thought to ask anyone before.
It's a Three Stooges line.
No, it was from Young Frankenstein.
Ah.
They were imitating the monster in Young Frankenstein. Somebody said, Walk This Way, and they got a whole song out of it. Hadn't occurred to me before that to actually ask anyone.
Well, Calling Dr. Love came from a Three Stooges short. The original line was Calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard, Calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard.
I remember that.
And the a needle as an extension of, you know, sort of a phallic symbol,
mm-hmm.
and injecting a patient always struck me as being sort of interesting. The doctors have always been, you know, they can go and take off the clothes of their patients and stuff, so that's always interesting. So that's where calling Dr. Love came from. Because he's got the cure you're thinking of, you know, that stuff.
Look It Up, is that as obvious as it strikes me, or is there any...
Look It Up is more just party, have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Paul wrote that, and there was no particular story about it. It was just how sometimes words roll off your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, get down doesn't actually mean get to the floor, and get low means, you know, get realer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes words are just the inference. Is more important than what the actual meaning is.
Mm-hmm.
Hot dog doesn't certainly mean a hot dog.
Right. You're obviously not ready to give up the road.
No way.
And
where else do you have, you know, I feel like a queen bee on the road, or a king bee, with all these workers around me serving me, and, you know, you're hungry, you pick up the phone. Your shirts are dirty, somebody cleans them for you. You don't have to clean your own, you don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm. How settled are you when you're at home? I mean,
am I home?
When you're at home,
okay.
How settled are you? Do you need that attention? Do you feel like, you know?
Oh, there's plenty of that if you want it. But I'm hardly ever home.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, directly from a tour, I go to either producing another group, or at the end of this tour, I'm going to go right on to the next movie.
Hmm. Have you ever had any kind of feeling like, you know, maybe it's time to establish some roots or settle in somewhere?
No, I'm not interested in kids or wives.
Hmm. That somehow doesn't surprise me, but I was curious.
No, that's not for me.
Wouldn't
be fair to the girl. The girl I married would have a rough time of it. I can imagine on our wedding night, while she's taking a shower, I'd be plummeting the maid on the floor. Wouldn't be fair to her.
I bet that must have been a real interesting chat you and Selleck had, or chats on that subject. Boy, oh boy.
Could be.
Yeah, I bet. Stupid question. Has the Smithsonian ever talked to you about preserving your tongue when you're gone?
No, but they've got a set of our costumes.
Hmm.
Preserving my tongue, no. But they do have...
You know, they had those stories for all those years about that John Dillinger stuff.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
And his 12-inch dick or something.
Yeah,
yeah, I've heard about that. But, no, as memorabilia from the 20th century, they have that. And the Smithsonian sent a tour through Europe,
mm-hmm.
of American pop culture. So it was like an American pop culture thing. And it had Cher's rhinestone outfit, Elvis's belt, and my outfit.
Oh, neat.
And that was the three representations of pop culture, and then, you know, they had other things.
Hmm. I'm almost ready to wind up with it, Gene. I didn't mean to keep you so long. I read a thing where someone was talking about when the band had released all the solo albums, and one of the reviewers, and I think she was with the Chicago Tribune, said that...
You know, my memory is so good that I can tell you what her name was.
Okay, go ahead.
Lynn Van Matren.
Yeah, then you probably know what I'm going to ask.
Go ahead.
She said that it seemed like you guys all were closet Barry Manilows. And
well,
I know this is several years later,
well,
but...
Well, she hit on something that I've always believed in. I've got a company that's called Man of a Thousand Faces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, through that company I do the other stuff, non-Kiss stuff. And it goes right along with what I believe, which is that everybody is not the sum total, you know, the sum total of everybody is not just one part.
Mm.
There are many different faces and all that stuff. And the hardest heavy metal guy still has a piece of Barry Manilow in there. That guy is going to one day go up on top of a hill, take a deep breath and go, you know, these flowers smell awfully good. And you may not say it, but that's a piece of Barry Manilow stuck right in there.
Mm.
But I know what she was reacting to. Because on some of the stuff on the records, there were some ballads.
Right.
It's not the kind of thing that I like to make a habit out of, because it's just not going to make your heart pump. But
mm-hmm.
there's a place and time for everything.
Very good. Well, that seems like a good way, I think, to wind up.
Okay.
It's a nice...
Send me a copy, would you?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I will. I did. I will. Thinking ahead. Yeah, and thanks for calling. I enjoyed chatting with you again.
My pleasure.
Have a good one.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, for more great interviews, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with stars such as John Denver, Kirk Douglas, Billy Bob Thornton, Cheryl Hines, Bo Diddley, and many more, many, many more. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. The Mr. Media blog is also now available by subscription on the Amazon Kindle Reader. And you can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. I'll remind you that this interview will be archived permanently. You can come back anytime and listen to it at your leisure. And please tell a friend. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you take the time to give a piece of your day and spend it with us. Come back real soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.